Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical, where we're talking about how to take the truth of scriptures and make it a practical reality in your Christian family. This episode is brought to you by Covenant Eyes. We want you to know that we have used Covenant Eyes software for over 10 years to help teach our kids and to keep ourselves honest when we're online.
What I like best about it, Hal, is it's easy to use. The reports are easy for me to see what's going on with every member of our family individually.
Come out to our sponsor page and click on that link for Covenant Eyes. Come to raisingrealmen.com/sponsors and you can get a free month's trial. Covenant Eyes, because what you do online has an impact on your life offline. Well, we do want to welcome you. This is episode 119.
Wow.
And we are talking about something which is, near as I can tell, it's universal.
It's universal and it's horrible, Hal.
And I hate it. I really hate it.
It will make your skin crawl, your hair stand up.
There's a certain tone of voice.
It's really I hate whining.
It's whining.
I hate whining. Whining is so awful. It's icky.
It's terrible. We hate whining. Oh,
you hate whining too,
That's right. Yeah, and you're tearing your hair out. Just hearing it, you probably just canceled the whole program. Not even going to download the rest because you heard that tone of voice and said, "That's enough. I get that all day. And I don't want any more."
Well, we're not going to whine anymore.
No, in fact, we're going to try to help you maybe find a way to stop having it anymore.
At least to really cut down on it.
Or at least to get started.
Because it's a fallen world.
And
people are going to whine.
Yeah. You know, it really doesn't, it really shouldn't surprise us when that sweet little child learns how to, they learn how to speak, to talk, to say sweet, loving things. And shortly afterwards, they begin whining. That's just the nature of children,
well,
I think.
You know, really, they start whining before that. You know, babies cry to get what they need. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, if you don't want your baby to cry much, there's a way to reduce your baby's crying.
Radical thought, you know, you can just, like, respond to them.
You can watch their body language and respond to their early cues. You know, I'm a trained lactation consultant.
Okay.
And one of the things we try to teach moms is that crying is really a very late stage of hunger.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, babies, when babies first get hungry, they start turning their heads. They're looking for a breast.
Okay.
Okay. And then when they don't find one, when they turn their head and they don't find mama around there, then they actually, even sometimes even before the turning head, you see those little sucky motions. Sometimes you see it in their sleep. They'll make those little sucky motions with their mouths.
Do they really?
In their sleep sometimes. That means tummy's starting to rumble. I'm getting hungry. I'm going to start looking for something. You see that head turning?
Uh-huh.
And then they stuff their fist in their mouth and try to suck on that to assuage that feeling of desperation.
Okay.
And then finally they cry. And if you wait until they cry, it's actually, especially the newborn, difficult to get them nursing correctly. And it takes a while to calm them down. You know, that crying is kind of the desperation response. The, I can't get help with somebody, please help me. Where's mama?
Okay. So it's kind of like when we say, if you wait till his voice cracks to start talking about changes in adolescence, you've already missed the early cues.
Well, you have missed the early cues if you wait till a baby is crying.
Yes.
And, you know, I really don't like all these things that talk about, you know, letting your children cry for a period before you respond to them.
Particularly babies.
Particularly small babies. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the Lord said, those who are weary, mm-hmm. you know, and heavy laden, come unto me, you who are weary and heavy laden.
And I will give you rest.
You know, that the response is not, go cry for a while and then I'll respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
And our babies really actually didn't cry much at all. Now, sometimes babies cry for other reasons. Sometimes they have colic. But a lot of the general crying that babies do can be dealt with by meeting their needs earlier by watching their cues.
So it's kind of natural for a little bitty child to cry for what it wants. The problem is not so much babies, although some people have issues with that. But the problem I see is not so much the babies. It's the 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 6-year-old who
yes.
is a whiner.
Who hasn't gotten what they want. Sometimes they haven't even asked yet.
Uh-huh.
They just immediately go to whining.
Yeah, and you know, there's some people that just seem to be programmed for this. I remember one writer I used to read said that his little brother responded to any external stimulus by whining. And, you know, I have known grown-ups who just had that kind of wheedling sound in their voice all the time. It just was a habit with them.
Some of it's personality stuff. You know, there are people who are naturally optimistic, people who are naturally pessimistic. You know, there's Pooh Bears and there's Eeyores in the world.
Okay.
And some people have a natural bent toward being Eeyore.
Mm-hmm.
But they can still learn some self-control and learn when it's appropriate, you know?
I think that's a key to it, that to start off with, it's a behavior, you know. It's something that they're doing. It's not necessarily this child is awful because he whines, but rather I don't like the whining. If they would just not whine, then I would probably have more patience with them. Okay, so how can we teach them not to whine? What can we do with this behavior? Because if it's a behavior, you ought to be able to train that, at least to make some attempt at it.
Well, I think first we need to explain to them that what they're doing is annoying.
Okay.
You know, if it's a child, teenager, whatever, you look at them and you say, the tone of voice you're using is annoying to me. Please stop it.
Right. They need to, and we need to teach them to identify it.
Right.
Because a lot of times, I think people don't even know what they're doing. And the earlier you can start training that, the better. Because, you know, once it's a habit, but I always talk this way, you know, it's harder to break those habits when they're really deeply ingrained. But yeah, to stop, you know, to stop what you're doing. And sometimes that's our irritation. We don't want to be interrupted. And that's why they start whining, is because we didn't respond when they tried to interrupt us earlier.
And yeah, that's something else to talk about, particularly with homeschooling. I think lots of times we get into whining behavior because the toddler interrupts us. And we say, hold on, let me finish this lesson. But toddlers are notoriously impatient. And so they interrupt us again and we say, hold on, let me finish this lesson. And we put them off. And, you know, toddlers have a very short attention span for anything but whining.
And
they can whine all day long.
They can do that all day.
And I've found lots of times when I'm homeschooling the kids, that we don't have any toddlers anymore, but back when we had toddlers, if the toddler comes up, to tell the school-age kid, hang on a minute, or work on this problem, or turn the teacher's manual around and say, read this.
Mm-hmm.
And spend just a few minutes paying attention to that toddler. Hey, say, come here. Let's do some toddler school. And count their toes, or sing the ABC song, or memorize a Bible verse with them. And, you know, if I get face-to-face and eyeball-to-eyeball with them, pretty soon they're gone. Because they do have a very short attention span.
They're just touching base.
They just need to check in with mama.
Right. And if you don't do that, then they can become wheedly, bothersome, whiny little kids.
Well, I find when they need to check in, the longer I put them off, the more of my attention they need when I do pay attention to them.
Okay, let me say something that somebody, since they're not here to hear me, I'll say this because they would probably take offense, but isn't it true that sometimes behaviors you thought were dealt with when they were 5 years old show up again when they're adolescents?
Particularly during the preteen years.
Don't you sometimes see teenagers that are sort of waffling back and forth between being young grown-ups and being like old toddlers?
You know what I think's going on, Hal?
What?
I think they're full of hormones, and those hormones are taking the filters away. And you're getting unfiltered heart. And sometimes that's not a pretty sight.
Although it's an important thing.
Oh, it is important. It's a valuable opportunity to find out what's really going on inside them, even if it's not very pretty.
Yeah, because then, I mean, we can only go by what we see. I mean, the scripture is very plain about that. God looks on the hearts, but man can only judge by the outward appearance. And so when those things erupt out into visibility, then we can say, oh, I see that there is a heart issue here. And so that's a good thing in a way, although it's inconvenient and it's unpleasant to deal with. But okay, let's go, before we get to that, let's go right back to this. Here's a behavior.
Okay.
Very simple. We've got a behavior we don't like. They have a tone of voice. They have a wheedling sort of attitude. What can we do with that?
Well, we've dealt with it a couple of different ways, depending on the child. One way that works at all ages is when they devolve into the whining, as I look at them and I kind of grin and I say, you know, I don't speak whine. You're going to have to try again.
Like it's a different language.
Like it's a different language and mama just doesn't hear it, doesn't pay attention to it. I'm not going there. I'm not going to pay attention.
I was dealing with a young person that will remain nameless just the other night. And this person was complaining about something and I was trying to get to the bottom of it. And I asked a question and the answer was, and I said, you know, I can't tell if that's yes or no. I really can't speak that language. So that's a... yeah. Okay. So that's one approach to say, you have just lapsed into a foreign language and I ceased to understand and interpret whine some time ago. So you're going to need to use those higher level language skills, which God has blessed you with, and form actual conventional English words.
Yes.
And we won't worry too much about grammar. Just as long as you give me words, that will be an improvement.
And okay. So with preteens, teens, younger children, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll say, with a grin, you know, I don't speak whine, try again.
Okay.
If that is where I say, okay, you know, nope, let's try it again without the whine. And make them repeat themselves till they can say it in a normal tone of voice.
Till they get the idea that I've got to control the way that I speak. The way I speak.
If I want to communicate something to mama, I better use the right tone of voice.
If nothing else, you'll irritate them and they'll say, well, mom's going to get started again if I'm not careful about the way I use my language.
And I try to stay cheerful during this process because the goal is to make everyone miserable. And so I try to stay cheerful and calm and keep my temper because particularly the preteen, losing your temper doesn't do any good at all. It just makes things worse.
Hmm.
Now, if the whining is extensive and it becomes a habit and it begins to define someone, we had a child that just, I guess maybe he was 3 or 4, and he just whined constantly. And I was really having trouble communicating with him. It was driving me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I started out, and when he would start whining, I would say, okay, I'm so sorry. I told you not to whine. You may not speak for 1 minute.
Right. And
now, the goal is to get attention, so that was pretty painful, you know, that to not be able to speak for 1 minute.
Uh-huh. And so...
And then the next time they whine, I say, you can't speak for 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
And the next time they whine, 3 minutes. One child got up to 20 minutes, Al.
Wow.
Now, if you add 20 plus 19 plus 18 plus 17 all the way back, that's a lot of minutes that child had to be quiet that day because they could not seem to express anything except in a whine. Now, what's interesting is this kid is an adult now, and he's not whining at all, really.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Although that's part of that kind of Eeyore expression is kind of part of his personality.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes he'll call and say, Mom, I just want to talk, you know?
Yeah. Okay. But all right. So that, you know what? I think that is the only time that we still use timeout for disciplinary purposes. You know, that was something that was all the rage when we lived out on the left coast years ago. But we found it was ineffective discipline in most situations, but for whining to say, okay, son, daughter, I love you tremendously, but you have got to stop whining, and so you are now going to be quiet. You're going to be utterly silent for the next 60 seconds in a kitchen timer, you know. Great. Tick, 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 tick. You know, that's a, of course, we don't have to have the kitchen timer now because everybody's got a smartphone, and you could just go to your phone app and put on your timer, but sometimes a little mechanical timer like Heidi St. John sells timers, I think, and those kind of things. That could still be a help just as a prop. But yeah, I remember we did that, and it is kind of effective. And if nothing else, it gains you a couple of moments of calm anyway. Right. So small parenting win.
And sometimes if they whine for something, I say, you're going to whine about it. You're not going to get it. But you got to be careful about that.
Well, yeah.
Because sometimes they really need it.
Well, sometimes they might come in and say, Mom, I need a Band-Aid. Why do you need a Band-Aid? I cut my finger off. Okay, well, let's see. You can't, you know, stop them there saying, I'm sorry, you whined for it. You can't have it for the, you know, meanwhile they're bleeding on the carpet or something. But but you do, so you do need to have some common sense and some mercy. And you know what? One thing I discovered raising these kids is that any kind of ongoing behavior, I mean, if it's not destroying the world or wrecking somebody's morality, any kind of thing that you're working on long term, you're going to have plenty of opportunities.
Isn't that the truth?
You don't have to engage every time they cross a line.
Yes. You know, and there are some teachers who say that you have to deal with this every single time. Our kids aren't dogs. You know, they're intelligent human beings. You know, they were gifted by God with a heart that tells them when they've done wrong.
And you know what? God looks at us and he knows our frame, that we're just dust.
Yeah.
I mean, we're weak. We get tired. We lose our filters, as it were. And so, you know what? When you're looking at your child and he's on the wrong end of a 400-mile drive in the car and he's out of sorts, man, I'm out of sorts too. Let's give him some grace, you know, and say,
seriously,
I'll deal with this when it's calm and there's not something that's provoking it.
Because sometimes they're saying, are we there yet? And I'm feeling the same thing.
Yeah, sometimes we're glad the little one is whining, so that way we don't have to. So, all right, but that is one thing to say. Okay, if they're using the whining as a tool to manipulate the parent, that's a good time not to be manipulated. To say, okay, you're going to whine for this, you're going to throw a tantrum for this or whatever. That's just an automatic, whoa, stop. It ain't going to happen.
And also, they're trying to get all over your nerves, so keep your temper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't let them jerk your chain around. Don't let it get all over your nerves, because that's giving away the farm, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so those are some things you can do. You can just kind of laugh it off and say, look, you need to speak a better tone. You can put them on a timeout sort of regimen.
I don't speak wine.
You can restrict it. You know, be sure that you're not rewarding this bad behavior. Yeah. But, you know, that's all behavior. And behavior is oftentimes it's an outside symptom of something underlying.
Well, isn't that the truth? And, you know, it's so important to realize that yes, we have to train our kids' behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't reach their hearts, we've got a problem. We end up with a whitewashed sepulcher, a Pharisee, somebody who's all clean on the outside and is a mess on the inside.
Yeah, you get somebody who's a well-behaved atheist in the end.
And ooh, that's not
That's not a win. Okay, we don't want that. So, all right, what's underlying this? Why would you whine? Because you know what? I get whiny sometimes.
Oh, I do too.
I exaggerate this to kind of make the point, but do I complain? Do I fuss?
Oh, I went online to one of my mommy's groups yesterday morning and whined because I wanted to go to church and I couldn't go to church because I felt bad.
Uh-huh.
And I whined and they comforted me and they,
you know,
about half of us, it seemed like, were home with someone sick yesterday. Yeah.
You know, when I was a college student and I was a new convert, our Bible study was reading through Philippians, and we got to chapter 2, and verse 14 just struck me in a way that I hadn't really expected, because that verse says, do all things without grumbling or disputing. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. And I thought, wow, I do that, don't I? Because I'm a college student. I mean, who's the most discontented person in the universe?
They whine about the food. They whine about their dorm.
They don't
whine
like their professor.
Professors, their classes. And I got an 8 o'clock class.
And that's just, and they play one downsmanship. You know,
You
got an 8 o'clock class. I got an 8 o'clock class on Saturday. Yeah. And we have to be there an hour early. And just, you know, it's a sport. It's one of the favorite indoor sports of the college student. Complaining. And you know what? That Bible verse struck me and I thought, that would really be a testimony. Because, you know, he goes on and he says, do these things without grumbling or disputing, that you may show
yourselves to be lights in the world.
And you know what? I thought, wow. So if I'm a college student and I have the same, you know, mediocre dining hall experience, I've got the same professors overworking us. I've got to walk through this slushy weather type of experience, but I don't complain about it. But I talk positively, that I try to turn the conversation a different direction. That's a testimony.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, wow. And it really struck me.
It's a tremendous testimony. And hell, it's a testimony since college too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we've had some pretty wild trials the past few years.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I've had people that are in our friends and family circles that don't know the Lord who've said, you know, wow, you know, the way you went through this trial with such a cheerful spirit, that just really shook me up. Well, why does it shake people up when we go through a trial with a cheerful spirit? Mm-hmm. Because that's not the natural man.
No, it's not. And an interesting thing, you know, when Paul speaks later on in Philippians, when he talks about it, he says, I have learned in whatever state that I am to be content. You know, one of the old commentators points out, Paul says, I learned this. He didn't say, I just naturally have this gift of optimism. It said, no, Paul learned to be content. That's something we really need to focus on, because our natural tendency is discontentment. And that's really what, you know, your child is whining because he's hungry. He's discontented with the fact that he hadn't been fed recently.
Right.
That's reasonable. We get discontented about bigger things.
And about all kinds of things. You know, Paul says, continuing that verse from Philippians 4, mm-hmm. I've learned in whatever state I am to be content, I know how to be abased and how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I've learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Yeah, and sometimes we just grab that last part. I can do everything because Jesus strengthens me, but we don't say...
But one of the hardest things to do is to be content in everything.
You know, it's a fruit of the Spirit.
It is.
And, you know, in Galatians chapter 5, it says, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control.
Gentleness and self-control. These are the fruit of the Spirit.
So what patience and joy... and self-control, these are things that, well, we should be striving to gain these and to grow in these, but recognize that they're a gift of God, that they're things, they're the fruit of the Spirit working in our lives, which means that we're not going to be able to just, you know, man up and be, you know, we're going to be sweet and patient and joyous and kind and all the rest, but rather to say, you know, God help me, I need this in my life, I need your grace. You know, there's so many verses that deal with contentment, with patience, with trusting God. And I think we'll just throw a lot of these out on the show page because we're running short on the time.
Right.
But one thing that has really helped me a lot, and you know, this, I really got sit back in my seat about this a few years ago when I got my diagnosis of cancer. And somebody challenged me in a very sweet and loving fashion that, you know, Romans 8:28 says, we know that all things work together for good to those who love God and who are called according to his purpose. And you know what? I had to sit back and say, even cancer, even lymphoma, that's working for my good. Well, the Bible says it is because I love God and I trust that God loves me. And so this doesn't happen by accident. There's something going on here that God is doing in my life, and I need to be faithful and patient. And I think that, you know, looking at that verse, remembering that verse when somebody cuts us off in the parking lot for the last space in the shade, you know, when the bills come in faster than we know how to pay them.
When the kids don't do the chores and I walk into the kitchen, the kitchen's a mess.
And all of those kind of things to say, you know what, God has purpose and I'm his, you know, I'm his servant. I'm his maidservant, you know, whatever it would be. Can we trust God even with the irritations in our lives? Or do we just lose it and complain to everybody online and put it on social media and go to the whole cynical route of somebody who doesn't have grace?
Well, I'll tell you what, if we do, our children will whine and be discontented too. That's one thing I've seen is that what you and I do in our home makes a huge difference to the spirit in our home and the attitude of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That when we have a good attitude, when we're content, the children are a lot more content. You know, they expect it to be content. Some of that is just changing how you think about things.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering what God has done for us, reviewing what God has done for us and how he's provided for us. I was feeling pretty whiny a couple weeks ago about something, worried, you know, and I had to stop and think, okay, you know, the Lord has taken care of this kind of thing in the past. Well, you know, what happened when our kids were on a trip? One of our adult sons took our high school senior on a college visit halfway across the country this past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And his van started breaking down. His car broke down, looked like it wasn't going to be repairable. And I just panicked. I thought, Lord, what are we going to do? We're already down to Hal and I with just one vehicle. What are we going to do here? Mm-hmm. Lord provided him a car before they got back from the trip. A much nicer one than the one he had lost.
And, you know, that's the one thing to remember. We have been blessed over and over and over and over again. And God, so much that we just take it for granted.
God has met our needs before. If he wants us to have mm-hmm. a house in the country or whatever your mm-hmm. dream is, dad working from home or another vehicle, mm-hmm. he will see that we have it.
You know, another thing, and I was reading one of the old Puritans had written a whole book on this called The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment. And just in his summary, his ideas, these are things you can do to develop this. One of them was, you remember God's blessings. The second was, remember, you deserve much, much worse, and it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
You know, we had a friend recently who was widowed. You know, he's still relatively young, and his wife passed away from cancer. And I'm thinking, you know, I've never had to bear that.
Yeah.
And if they look at so many things that other people have gone through, and God has spared us from that, and you think, you know, I don't deserve the blessings that I have. How can I complain about the blessings that I don't get? You know?
You know, one thing that can really help is mm-hmm. to give our kids examples that they can think of how people have handled the things that they're going through. You know, that's one of the things I really loved about Pollyanna, not the Disney Pollyanna, but the original Pollyanna, mm-hmm. is the whole book was about how do we rejoice in all things, even when some things are awful?
And it's a great exercise because on the one hand, when you describe it, people roll their eyes because it sounds unrealistic. And yet, when you see it in the pages of the book as this young girl struggles with things,
yes,
she doesn't just flutter around and not see things. She deals with the doubts. She deals with disappointment. She deals with people treating her badly. And she struggles to trust that God is doing good things. And that ultimately it's all going to be worked out.
And you know, the thing that's wonderful about that book is it's so palatable. It is so funny and enjoyable. Even our teenage boys enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It is really funny. You know, we made it into an audio book on our site because our family loved it so much. Mm-hmm. We made another audio book about another book that's great for this mm-hmm. Before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that was The Five Little Peppers.
The Five Little Peppers. Yeah. What I loved about The Five Little Peppers is they were very poor. I mean, so poor we can hardly imagine. People today in America don't live like that.
There's not a safety net then.
Yes. And yet, later when things got better, they remembered those days when they were in grinding poverty, according to our perspective, as happy and joyful days. Because of the family togetherness and the love they had. And I want my kids to have that attitude. I don't want them to see the trials around us. I want them to remember these days as the happy and joyful days we have as a family.
And when we have extra blessings, we rejoice in those, but we hold them loosely. And as the scriptures say, that if we have food and raiment, we'll be content with these. And then if we abound, that's great. And if we're abased, as long as we have food and raiment, then that's enough.
That's enough.
That'll carry us. So, you know, all of these things, we're going to put a bunch of verses out on the show page just so you can look these up yourselves and kind of reflect on it. But really, ultimately, it comes down to this. We all have a tendency to be whiners. It's just that our children don't have their filters up yet. And so they are noisy about it.
They go over the top a little bit.
We just do the socially acceptable grown-up kind of whining. And really, all of it, we need to remember, it's discontentment with the gifts of a loving God.
And you know what, Hal? We worry about what our testimony is like, but if we did, we'd do all things without grumbling or complaining.
Wow. Okay, well, look, I think it's about time to wrap up. We just want to say thank you for joining us out here. You can always find us at halandmelanie.com/radio. That'll take you to our show page.
And we're on iTunes. Click on the link on our show notes and you can subscribe. That way every show will be ready and waiting for you as soon as it's available.
And you know what? If you like this kind of content, this sort of free encouragement and teaching and challenge that we try to put out every week for you at absolutely no charge, if you like this, why don't you consider becoming a patron? You can come out to patreon.com/halandmelanie just to say, here's some moral support, or maybe a little bit of financial support too. That's welcome. Always remember this. James 1:22 says that we should be doers of the word and not just hearers only. And so we hope you'll join us next week as we seek to take practical application into the Christian family in the 21st century.
I'm Melanie.
And I'm Hal.
Thanks for coming, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.